Part 23, Chapter 2. Winter had come to Denver, but the cold wind and snow flurries could not dampen the elation of Brown Limper Staffer. The new banknote had arrived. A packet of them lay on his desk, and four of them were spread out before him. How beautiful! They were bright yellow, printed on one side, and there, right in the middle, was an oval picture of Brown Limper. What an awful lot of trouble they had had getting that picture. Brown Limper had tried innumerable poses, facing this way and that. He had tried countless expressions, frowning or scowling, but none of these would do. Lars Thorensen had finally had to give him a hand. Lars had explained that it was the beard that was wrong. Brown Limper had a black mustache and beard, and whereas the mustache was all right, the beard was thin and scraggly. So the thing to do was shave off the beard and trim the mustache until it was a bushy tuft just under the nose. That was the sort of mustache the great military hero Hitler had had, and so it must be correct. Then there had been the problem of a proper costume. Nobody seemed to find anything proper. General Smith came to the rescue. He had heard one of his men report that there was an old graveyard that had air-sealed coffins in it. Several had been dug up, looking for a corpse that had been properly dressed, but after more than 1,000 years, the fabric wouldn't hold together. The only outcome of all that was a sickness that had hit the Brigantes. 2 had died, and a doctor passing through had said it was formaldehyde poisoning, whatever that was. Somebody had finally found a bolt of gray cloth in a basement that didn't tear very much, and somebody else had found a pattern that said chauffeur's uniform on it, and some Brigante women had sewn it up. They had also found a black visored cap that lasted long enough for the picture. Smith had a handful of jewelry he'd found, which Brown Limper knew couldn't possibly be rubies or diamonds and was probably colored glass, and they'd put that on the left breast of the coat so he would have medals. The final posing was solved by using a picture Lars had of somebody called Napoleon, also a great military hero of ancient man. The pose had the fingers of one hand tucked into the coat edge on the breast. MacAdam had been a bit difficult. He had asked Brown Limper whether this was what he really wanted by way of a portrait, and Brown Limper had been cross about it. After all that trouble, of course that was what he wanted. So here was the new banknote at last. It was a 100-credit note. MacAdam had said he could only print one denomination, and it had to be 100 credits. Brown Limper realized that that made this a far more important bill. It had the bank name on it. It was only printed in English and no other tribal language. And right there, loud and clear, it said, 100 American credits. And it said, valid for the payment of public and private debts in America. One of the conditions MacAdam had made was that all earlier money in the country be collected up and exchanged for these new bills. It was hard to do because the earlier issue was a 1-credit banknote and this American issue was a 100-credit banknote. But the dream of having all Tyler notes gone was so alluring. Brown Limper had made up the differences in exchange out of his own pocket. This victory was doing much to improve Brown Limper's spirits. They had been very low as of late. When that Tyler had not only not gone to his booby-trapped home in the meadow, but had walked right out of the country, Brown Limper had been so dispirited he had wanted to call off the whole Turl project. But Lars had talked to him. Lars seemed to have developed a hatred for Tyler. He did not say it was from the degradation of hiding under scrap metal in the garage and envy over the way Tyler could fly, but the emotion was very well understood by Brown Limper, who considered it natural. Lars had said that if they went ahead and actually transshipped, Tyler was certain to reappear. Turl had talked to him. Turl said that when they fired a shipment to Cyclo, Tyler would be right there, and he had traps for him that even Tyler could not get around. So Brown Limper had continued with the project. Other things were going wrong, though. He did not hear much anymore from the tribal chiefs. Lars explained it was natural. They trusted him to run things. No pilgrims came anymore to the mine site. But that was natural. It was winter. People had been disappearing. First the hotel cook, then some Swiss shopkeepers, then another and another, until now the hotel was no longer operating and no shops were open at all. The shoemakers had vanished. The Germans who repaired things were no longer to be found. The Llaneros had driven the large herds south, where they would have better winter feed, they said, and then they had vanished. Brown Limper had taken it up with Snith. Did this have anything to do with Brigantes? Even Turl put the question to him. But Snith swore up and down he and his men had behaved. The academy was still there and operating. There seemed to be a vast number of pilot trainees and a vaster number of machine operators. But they stayed down at the academy, and all one saw was an occasional plane doing practice flights. All his office radios and teleprinters were gone. They broke down and had to be taken away to be repaired, and then they never came back. But never mind. Brown Limper couldn't operate them anyway and couldn't really trust anyone else to. This new banknote was making a world of difference to his morale. He decided he would not pay the pilots in it. He'd get even with them. People would be hanging him, Brown Limper, on their walls now. On sudden impulse, he decided he had better mend his political fences with his own tribe and show them this bill, of course. He called Lars and General Smith, and they got into a mine passenger plane Lars kept in the parking lot and took off for the new village he had put his people in. Brown Limper was still admiring one of the banknotes he held in his hand. The thought of showing it off to the village people warmed him. He did not even mind the harrowing way that Lars Thorensen flew. Narrowly missing snow-covered peaks that were not even on their route, Lars set them down near the old mining town. But it all seemed deserted. Not a single plume of smoke rose from a fire. Not even the smell of it remained. Carrying a Thompson, Smith scouted the place. Empty. Not even a trace of belongings. Nothing. Brown Limper searched, looking for a clue, dragging his club foot through the smooth snow from building to building. Finally, he found where they must have had a meeting. There were some torn scraps of paper lying about. And then, under a table where it might have fallen off a pile of papers unnoticed, he found a letter. It was from Tom Smiley Townsend. Brown Limper looked at it and went into an immediate rage. Not at what it said, but at Tom Smiley's having the effrontery to know how to write. What arrogance! But then he saw it was not really written. It was printed, and rather crudely at that. Even the signature was printed. So he decided to be tolerant and read it. The letter went on and on about how nice some area known as Tashkent was. Big mountains, endless plains of wild wheat, lots of sheep, and a mild winter climate. And how he had gotten married to some Latin. Disgraceful. No blood purity there. Brown Limper threw the letter down. Well, maybe the village people had gone back to their old home. They had not wanted to move. But he was surprised that the Indians and the people from the Sierra Nevadas and the other British Columbian fellow had not remained here, for they hadn't cared for the old village. Too cold and too heavy a prospect of starving every winter. They flew to the old village. Lars had trouble setting down and almost landed in the middle of one of those uranium circles. When he could let go his grip on the seat, Brown Limper looked around. No smoke here, either. Brown Limper poked into some of the houses. When they had moved at such short notice, people had had to leave most of their personal possessions behind, and Brown Limper thought they must still be there. But no. Every house was empty. Not ransacked the way Brigantes left places. Just neatly empty. With a bit of fear, because it had been booby-trapped, he approached the old Tyler house. It was still standing. Maybe the booby traps hadn't gone off. Then he saw that some of the roof was bulged, and he went around to the other side to where the front door had been. The door had been blown off. Lars and Snith were poking at something in the snow. It was the remains of two Brigantes. What hadn't been burned had been torn apart by wolves. It was obvious they had tripped the booby traps, and quite a while ago. General Snith poked at the scraps of money, skin, and bones with the muzzle of the submachine gun.
"What's up, come up here, prowling for loot?"
said Snith.
"Waste of good meat."
Brown Limper wanted to be alone. He dragged his foot up the slope to the place they once had buried people. He turned at the top and gazed down at the empty village, falling apart and now abandoned forever. Something had been nagging at him, and now it hit him. He was a tribal leader without a tribe. From 5 tribes, he had descended to 1, the Brigantes, and they were not native to America. Numbly, he realized he had better keep this awfully quiet. It undermined his whole position. Something caught his eye. A monument? A small stone shaft sticking up out of the ground. He moved around it. It had an inscription. Timothy Brave Tyler. A good father, erected in respectful memory by his loving son, J.G.T. Brown Limper screamed. He tried to kick the monument down. It was too firmly planted, and he only bruised his foot. He stood and screamed, tearing the echoes of the valley apart. Then he stopped. It was all Johnny Good Boy Tyler's fault. Everything that had befallen Brown Limper all his life was totally and wholly Tyler's fault. So Tyler would come again, would he? Turl might have his plans, and they might be all right. But Brown Limper was going to make very, very sure. If Tyler ever hit that firing platform again, he was a dead man. Brown Limper went down to the waiting plane. He said to Lars and Sniff, they mustn't know what he really intended.
"For our mutual protection, I think you should teach me how to use a Thompson submachine gun."
They agreed it would be wise. Turl had said time and again, you didn't dare shoot off a gun during a transshipment. But who cared about that? 2 guns. He would use 2 guns. Brown Limper planned how he would do it, all the way back to Denver.